Welcome to a series of netcasts brought to you by Yale University.
Welcome to another installment in the Law and Social Innovation podcast series, an initiative of the Eugene and Carol Ludwig Center for Community and Economic Development at Yale Law School. This podcast series explores the intersection of creative community development and inspired and inspiring social change. An astounding 650,000 Americans experience homelessness on any given night. Yet most communities have no system in place for identifying and helping members of this vulnerable group. Janice Fu, a second-year Yale Law student from the school's Community Economic and Development Clinic, sat down with Roseanne Haggerty, a MacArthur Genius Fellowship recipient and the founder of Common Ground and of Community Solutions, to discuss her organization's national efforts to end homelessness.
Hi, Roseanne. Thank you for joining us today. Homelessness and the threat of newly homeless citizens are pressing challenges for every city in the country. You founded Common Ground in 1990 to address this problem, and in doing so pioneered a new model of well-designed, community-focused, affordable housing. Tell me about the mission of Common Ground.
Common Ground's mission is to create affordable, supportive housing for homeless and low-income adults, and has for 20 years been doing that in New York, and has also expanded in New York into housing outreach and housing placement work that's pretty essential to reducing homelessness by going out to the street and determining who precisely needs extensive and unusual help in getting into housing.
What do you consider to be the organization's most important achievements over the last 20 years?
Certainly, in terms of the numbers of units created, Common Ground will open its 3,000th unit of affordable and supportive housing next year, and also really has, I think, helped change the mindset of New York and other cities about what's possible with respect to actually breaking myths on homelessness and, you know, whether people want to be homeless or want to remain homeless, and in showing that these types of facilities, mixed-income apartment buildings, essentially, can actually solve the problem of homelessness cost-effectively and permanently and can add value to their surrounding neighborhoods.
Why do you think there is such a huge gap between what we know works to end homelessness and what is actually done in most cities? What do you think are the biggest misconceptions that people have?
Well, that's precisely why we have spun off and actually left Common Ground, our national innovations unit, as of this July, to create a new organization, Community Solutions, specifically around that that critical task that you identified, Janice, which is why is it that with so much evidence in hand now that this is a solvable problem, that there's some of the key steps aren't practiced in most places. So what we find as we now work in over 100 communities is that in part, there's just incomplete information, and the people responsible for homelessness in a community, those responsibilities tend to be distributed and not very closely aligned. For instance, there is typically someone in a community who is channeling, maybe through the mayor's office or a social welfare agency, or federal resources into the community for the homeless. There's often a large shelter or some housing providers. There's the housing authority. There's the VA. There's the public health system. Everyone has a piece of this issue to deal with, but no one has typically developed a mechanism to bring all of these interests together and really focus on a common agenda, a very metric-driven strategy for reducing homelessness and for prioritizing those who are least likely to escape homelessness on their own, and for aligning and integrating resources. So it's an information problem, and it's been a problem of a missing mechanism to actually tie together the different components of responsibility and resources in local communities.
So how does Community Solutions actually serve as a catalyst, I mean, to deal with these info problems and act as this mechanism that brings groups together?
Our principal vehicle is something called the 100,000 Homes Campaign, and we very specifically selected this campaign methodology as a way to really build a movement around solving the problem rather than attempt to sort of franchise or propagate a good idea, because the very heart of the matter is that it's several good ideas working in concert that have to be practiced consistently by communities at the local level. And given the, it sounds like a complicated task, and mechanically it is, but it's very doable, and in fact, I think a very good model for other problems that cut across different agencies. And so our mechanism is, put this on a platform which is about challenging communities to work together to crowdsource the problem-solving nature of how you distribute good ideas in this space. So what it means to be a participant is your community signs up, and we initially went out to 18 communities to test the methodology, communities where we already had relationships and we had very effective change agents where we were relating to in terms of sharing good practice ideas. And so what we crafted with this group of communities is a methodology where we have taken the six critical steps to move from just total chaos and randomness, a lot of well-intentioned but random activity in communities, to a tightly organized local system that very consistently and effectively gets people housed. And so the first step is through this whole kind of platform where any community can join, we will show you how to organize a local team of all of the necessary players who need to work together to solve this problem, from the housing authority to the Veterans Affairs local office to the mayor's office or whoever is controlling the flow of federal and local dollars, to the faith communities, to the large not-for-profits and small who are working on the issue. So you organize the local team, and we have practices that help communities to do that. Then we show communities how you actually clarify the demand for housing. What is fascinating is to understand that in shelters and on the street, there are many different ways people are experiencing homelessness. And without very accurate and locally created data, you can almost not make serious gains on this issue. And so we show communities what they need to do is to use a consistent survey mechanism. The specific way we go about this is powerful, but there are other ways that it can be done. So there's nothing, rigid about the way this is executed, only the habit, which is to create accurate, real-time, local data about who is homeless, who's been on the street the longest, and what we have introduced is the notion that this is essentially a public health problem. And so the survey instruments that we've propagated around the country are called the Vulnerability Index. And what it means is that people are queried on whether they have one of eight health conditions related to early mortality of people living on the street. Parenthetically, we know from abundant research that homelessness takes about 25 years off your life. If you're homeless for 6 months or more, you're really putting your health at grave risk. And so what we help communities to do is go out, train volunteers to go get this data. Typically, the launch of this is a single registry week where over the course of a week from 4 to 6 a.m., volunteers canvass a community, get this data. Kind of amazingly, well over 80% of the homeless agree willingly to participate in the survey, to have their photograph taken, in exchange, people are given, and gratitude for their time, people are given usually a voucher for a restaurant or a phone card or something like that. But it has a powerful effect of creating very real, actionable data that is person-specific, and also to put members of a community in a very emotional and confronting situation where you're actually there in the wee hours of the morning talking to someone about how many times they've been to the hospital and how many times they've been to the emergency room, and no one comes back from that experience not being or without being a bit shaken up about the fact that this persists in their community of people who are quite ill and challenged, being left on the street. And so with this person-specific data, communities can actually prioritize who are the most vulnerable and begin matching their resources in new, more targeted, and more urgent ways. Because simultaneous to this creation of actual local data on who's homeless, we show communities how they can inventory their supply of assets very differently than they typically have. Who's got the housing in communities? It's usually not the not-for-profits who have the most affordable housing. It's your mainstream landlord community, the public housing authority, the operators of senior housing. And so, what we see, Janice, is that many communities have for years been saying, well, what do we have from HUD for the homeless this year? And it might mean, 40 new vouchers. Well, if you ask the question differently and you have all of this data to back it up, which is like, 10% of the seniors we just surveyed, or the homeless we just surveyed, are seniors. How do we get them on the track into the senior housing in our community? 5% are under the age of 18. How do we get young people reconnected with the services for homeless youth and others that are more specific and have different resources attached? The VA has a very serious and growing initiative around ending homelessness among veterans. But many of the veterans most likely to be homeless are unlikely to be already connected to the VA. And so the VA doesn't know how to find, the people they are set up to help in this area without help from communities. And so this is a process that can help surface who are the vulnerable veterans who are homeless and match them with VA resources. And so what I'm describing essentially is a giant process improvement project that is on the platform of this 100,000 Homes campaign. And an important layer to it, though, is having created a very dynamic, active, iterative community of change agents who convene by phone. It's not mandatory, but it's we try to create as much value in the context that in the material and the content that people really want to participate. And so every month we have an innovation call about some really dramatically important thing that somebody has figured out that makes the process better, that surfaces a new resource. And so we can use that space as well to do some pretty powerful crowdsourced problem solving. If, for instance, in Louisville, they just can't get their housing authority to cooperate because the housing authority is like saying, no, the rules say this. Well, if you've got 50 other people on the phone saying, absolutely not, we were able to do it in this community because we did this, we cited this, it just knocks down all of these old barriers to getting the work done. And so that's basically the methodology.
I think what you suggest is that although homelessness touches every single city in the country, it touches each city and each locality slightly differently. And so I'm just wondering if you found your methodology is more effective in some of those 18 cities and less effective in others.
Yeah, no, it's actually, cities have their resources, organized or disorganized differently, but the pattern is very similar community to community. What often makes this methodology succeed or not succeed, and the real, we've done enough research to see, what the key gaps are. You need an effective local champion. If communities may have very significant homeless issues, but if there isn't someone who basically is willing to put his or her hand up organizationally and say, we're ready to do or to change the way we do business, and we've got the credibility and standing in this community to invite others to the table, then it's very hard for that community to move. So a precondition for being able to really benefit from this methodology is that you have to have at least one person with standing who says, I'm ready to change the way we do business in this community. And then the second is related. The communities who get more people around the table are able to produce better and quicker results. So if it's like, you've got the VA to show up and you've gotten the mayor's office to show up, but you can't get the housing authority to the table, then you're not going to be as effective and fast at this as communities who have the VA, the mayor's office, the housing authority, the public health agency, the faith community, there really are strengths in numbers, because the more resources a community has that can direct in an effective way and in an aligned way, you know, the greater the range of tools to solve this problem. So it's really about the power of the team.
Right. I mean, in terms of alliances and people who are supporting your cause, there seem to be a lot of people rallying around community solutions. Have you experienced any political pushback beyond political apathy on the part of, say, the housing authority?
Not really. I think one of the things that we're very mindful of and are just so completely enjoying ourselves is that, you know, there are people all over the country who want desperately to solve this problem and just haven't known the best ways to go about it or haven't known how to scale up the good ideas. And so we are just kind of awash in good ideas and positive energy and kind of the joy of getting very important, urgent work done as a kind of a national community working on this. So, you know, political pushback, I wouldn't call it political, but some of the frustrations are, you know, for instance, and I think this is in more confusion than dug-in hostility, we could be making, as a nation, much more rapid progress on this issue if HUD and the housing authorities around the country just agreed that getting this problem solved needs to be a priority. You know, that we shouldn't have to, there's something, I don't know, like 3,000 housing authorities, you shouldn't have to go out and persuade each one of them. You know, this is something where, while we're doing all this bottoms-up community organizing and local support, I think a much clearer message from HUD about actually this needs to get done. And HUD is very on board and sympathetic with the goals of the campaign, but I think this goes to the politics of a history of not actually being welcomed by communities and being directive. And so that's where HUD is emotionally and in terms of its own goals completely on the same page with the aspirations of the campaign. But in terms of how they actually relate to all of these housing authorities across the country, there's not, you know, clear lines of authority, or there's a resistance to impose from the top. I guess I'm getting more and more to the point of, like, well, why not just, you know, figure that out? So that's the one area. And then the VA is another area where we just have amazing champions at the VA centrally, and the Secretary of the VA and the other leadership. This is an issue they're very passionate about, ending homelessness among veterans. But you see, and again, it's not resistance. It's just, you know, kind of the friction around change. At the local level, many VA facilities, they're health centers. They're not historically involved in housing issues. And so how to be effective partners can be kind of a struggle at the local level. But again, it's not about resistance. And I think both with HUD and the VA, it's just, you know, asking big agencies to relate differently centrally to their local affiliates.
I want to talk for a minute about homelessness in Connecticut, and I'm curious about the Swift Factory Project in Hartford's North End, which is intended to be a multi-million dollar job creation project for the city's most down-at-the-heels neighborhood. What makes this project exciting and also a good fit for your organization?
Well, as part of Community Solutions transition into an independent entity, we are very committed to working through the question of how you create effective and replicable strategies to prevent homelessness in the first place. And one of our hypotheses, again driven by data, is that we actually know where a lot of the homeless individuals and families in our country come from. they come from the neighborhoods in our country that are the poorest and where they've been, you know, where we see patterns of concentrated poverty, where things like evictions, child welfare involvement, incarceration, numbers of households on temporary assistance for needy families, those tend to cluster in the neighborhoods that all around the country are known of as the bad neighborhoods. Well, if we, you know, we've spent 20 years proving that downstream, getting vulnerable people reconnected with a stable home, and out of that stability, then connect them to the health, mental health, and employment help they need, that actually works to end and prevent homelessness once it's occurred. Our hypothesis is that in, you know, neighborhoods like the north end of Hartford, where all of these bad social outcomes actually collide, that these are the places that we should be making investments in stabilizing the housing and connecting the most vulnerable people living there to the health, mental health, and employment assistance they need. And so that's why the Swift Factory Project, is really a catalyst for getting that work done of connecting vulnerable people to more stable housing and support in a neighborhood that is one of the very fragile ones of the country. And we find, again, drawing forward our history, that visible signs of progress and change, the physical environment, you know, signaling the arrival of better, more coordinated services that meet the highest needs of the community in all of these communities, jobs and family support for fragile families, and schools are right at the top of the agenda, as well as safety, that, you know, by wrestling with these questions upstream, that's ultimately the way we put ourselves out of business.
How did you find this space? I read somewhere that the Swift Factory used to be a gold leaf factory. Can you describe the space a little bit?
Sure. We were approached by the Hartford Preservation Alliance that was trying to find a group that could aid in preserving this building. It's a 19th century factory and some related historic homes that was really kind of the neighborhood, the North End neighborhood formed around it. It was started as a family company just after the Civil War. It manufactured two products, gold leaf and the gold stamping material that you see, like, you know, the Holy Bible, you know, on leather, that material. And the building housed the company's, or the community's largest employer for over 100 years. The company wound down its operations in 2004, I believe, and the factory building was standing idle there. But when we were asked to go take a look at the building, we weren't looking for a property in the north end of Hartford. What we were doing, we were in the midst of actually thinking through strategies for intervening in neighborhoods like the north end of Hartford. And so it became a vehicle for getting at this larger question that we think is so critical to having an end game in homelessness, which is, how do you create the environments in these very high poverty places that actually protect people from becoming homeless, help put them on a path to greater stability before things fall apart.
And what does a successful Hartford Swift Factory project look like 10 years from now or 20 years from now?
Okay. Well, minimally, we have created 50 permanent, good quality jobs that we have, and also minimally taken something that was a blight in the community and made it very clearly one of the community's principal assets in terms of a central, publicly accessible space that is providing services of essential value to the community. In addition, we would hope that our presence there has made measurable change for the better in the stability of families with respect to their housing. That, you know, evictions, people's involvement in the child welfare system, people's experience of readmission into the criminal justice system, that all of those are trending very significantly downward. and also that from a physical standpoint, the neighborhood is much more conducive to a kind of coherent and supportive community, by which I think the measure is crime down, because the public spaces and rights of way and amenities really invite kind of positive use of the public spaces of the community. And then lastly, but also of vital importance, that at least one or two health indicators have changed for the better. We're deeply involved in mapping the community's health assets and the health challenges. And so, you know, what we focus on, but I can tell you it's probably going to be childhood obesity or some other chronic disease management that affects adults. But we're looking at these elevated patterns of poor health outcomes and how they could be shifted by managing, helping people to manage their health issues closer to home using the assets of their community. So those are the ways in which we hope we see a very different neighborhood that has been enhanced through our work there in collaboration with others. And like just underscore, this is all about bringing together local teams of people who, you know, want to get good work done, but, you know, have one piece of the pie, and really to be effective need to be working with others. And that's what our work is about in Hartford and a similar neighborhood in Brooklyn as well.
Ultimately, your main message seems to be, and you've written this many times before and said it many times before, that homelessness is a solvable problem. What can members of communities in Connecticut, in Hartford, in New Haven, including students and professionals who are not necessarily, you know, who do not work for the Housing Authority or the VA, do to help end homelessness in their communities?
Well, you know, I found, Janice, that even having people be aware that certain areas are, you know, the sources of, you know, kind of friction, or, you know, that, you know, government performance could be better, or that the efforts of the social welfare system in a community could be better coordinated. Even having people aware and asking helpful questions, not critical, because, you know, people are, you know, no one gets up in the morning and tries to, you know, frustrate progress, but students participating in your clinic, for instance, it's worth asking the local VA, what's your rate of housing placement? Yeah, how long does it take for a homeless vet who you identify to actually get into a home? What would help you to better target the resources you have at the veterans who are the most ill and most fragile and who need help the most urgently? Nobody asks those questions, and so, you know, once you start asking, you begin to get a conversation started with some of the folks who are responsible for this issue that can be helpful. But it's key to ask it in a helpful way, which is, you know, what's keeping you from being able to do the work that, you know, you're committed to doing better, and are there other resources or connections that could enable that? Likewise, you know, we find that this problem of missing connections is the culprit, and it's usually nobody's job, and this is part of the problem in a community, to connect the dots. And so, even, you know, one of the things that we think is very powerful is just how we could be using social media differently, and reporting on, you know, what is your community's, you know, rate of housing placement, and more people in a community should know what that is and be asking questions of how can we be better, and can that information be registered, communicated, you know, using social media in a way that makes it much more of a local issue. Like, you know, how are we doing here, and how are we doing compared to other cities? There are a number of ways, too, that individuals can help. I'm not sure where New Haven is. I think there's an interest on the part of New Haven in being part of the campaign. I should check that for sure, because they may have already signed up. But if New Haven has signed up, opportunities to volunteer with both, you know, creating and maintaining the registry, helping when individuals are getting ready to move into an apartment, to get that apartment set up, to, you know, frankly, people need friends and relationships once they're back in housing, you know, and get to learn where the grocery store is and how to navigate, you know, a new neighborhood. Those are the roles that volunteers can play. So I could go on and on, but there are many, many ways that people can be involved in solving the problem rather than simply helping homeless people to survive another day, which until we solve the problem, we've got to do, of course, but we can do better.
Thank you so much, Roseanne. That was great.
Thank you.